Chus, good evening.
Hey, man.
Hey. Okay, so before we get to our esteemed guest, we need to talk about Android for a second. Only because I've gotten a little bit of feedback from the show where people get cranky because we talk about the iPhone like it's all this futuristic stuff. And, oh, well, Android did it before. And I want to clarify, just when we start here, we know that a lot of the stuff that we talk about with the iPhone is not new.
It's just the first time that somebody got it right.
Not even that. What also ticks me off is people talk about Android like it's a phone. It's not a phone. When you say Android had a camera that was 20 megapixels, that's not Android that had the camera. God.
This is a bad apology, Joe. You're not getting there.
I would like to welcome our guest for this week.
Do it.
I'm not even going to say your last name because I'm going to mess it up. Can you pronounce your full name for me?
So my name is Adriana Chiaia.
Excellent. I can't even say your first name properly. Awesome. So Adriana is one of our esteemed colleagues over at Raft, and we have brought her on to talk about having better conversations through the Socratic method. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think you got it right.
Can you explain a little bit about what the Socratic method is?
The Socratic method was a method developed by Socrates during the 5th century before Christ. He developed a method where he would ask a series of questions to people, and his goal was to understand the implicit truth of one person without imposing his own on them. And this was a counter method to the Sophist methodology, which was all about persuasion and teaching the art of rhetoric in order to impose one's own opinion to others.
So why we found this out is you've been working on a talk for the last, I would say, 3 or 4 weeks around this topic, and you've been presenting it internally, which has actually allowed us to have better conversations internally and think about how we engage each other as well as how we engage clients to have better conversations by using a method like this. During one of your talks, you gave a really good example, and I want to hold off on that actually now that I was thinking about that. I think what would be nice is for you to discuss a little bit about how the Socratic method handles assumptions, which can be a very easy thing for designers to make and a very hard thing to actually unstick and have a discussion about.
That's really important because one of the main points that Socrates would make was called the Socratic irony. So when Socrates would start a conversation, he would assume a pose of ignorance, saying that he wouldn't know much about the topic. And this was engaging and challenging the other person to actually explain even further their assumption. And that would eventually lead to a false hypothesis. But the main point is that Socrates, by assuming that he didn't know much about the topic, he was more challenged to ask questions to the other person based on what the other person was saying. So he was eliminating all the biases and the personal assumptions that he had and focusing on actually what the other person was saying.
So why I really love this is so many designers walk into clients with a point of view that they want to push. As you said earlier, they used more of the Sophist method, where they have a point of view and they use rhetoric in order to accomplish a win for getting their point of view across, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That handoff? That was good.
I've seen people apply even a method that uses questions to get somebody else who is trying to explain a point that makes sense to put themselves into a corner. And it's called the 5 times why, which is a really good thing to apply to yourself. But when you apply it to another person, it can sometimes get really, really difficult for them to explain their point in a proper way.
So is that as opposed to asking them to express themselves, you're basically asking questions that's making them explain? Or how do you see those two as different?
I'm worried that the way in which you ask questions can also influence, and that's where Adriana's second point comes in. If you ask those questions in a challenging way, and if you keep on asking why when a person feels that they just explained themselves, you're trying to paint them into a corner. You're not really asking why because you want to figure out what the deeper need or point is that the person has, but you're asking why because you know that the next why will not have an answer.
Let me challenge that a little bit, because I think in general, the idea of the five whys, which I like, is you're taking a point of the previous answer and you're trying to drill down on that. So why one, why two, why three, why four, why five, right? And so I think that can be a very effective method. But what you said, I think very much holds true, especially for people who aren't ready to engage in a conversation. They can feel like, I just answered that, right? And instead of reacting, trying to figure out what you're looking for, you haven't reframed the question. And to Adriana's point, what's quite nice is it is allowing you to reframe the conversation in different ways to have both parties really think about what they are trying to accomplish, what they are assuming. And in a lot of ways, it parodies active listening, which you sent an article around about that a few days ago. But yeah, I think that's, you know, quite a nice way of having more engaging conversations, whether it be with each other or with clients. Let's actually take that example now. And I don't know, Adriana, since we're only audio here, what's a good example that we can use within this room?
So for instance, at the moment, we have a table in front of us. So could you guys please give me an assumption on this table?
It's cheap.
It's ugly? No, that's not an assumption.
It's an ass.
I think it's unlikely to fall over.
Unlikely to fall over. Okay.
Getting this assumption, how can we challenge that assumption? Removing the bias that I could have in this moment, let's ask you some questions. For instance, could you explain further why are you saying that that's ugly or why that's cheap?
No. His isn't ugly. This is a beautiful table. Yours is that it won't fall over. You're not calling my table ugly. I mean, I'm sorry. Please explain why it won't fall over.
It looks sturdy because it has big fat legs. Not ugly, just fat.
I think they're quite attractive. Thank you.
No, but I see a sturdy table and the legs look like they're a solid hole with the rest of the table.
So my next question would be about other perspective about this table. Do you think that everybody else in this room thinks about it in the same way?
You know we don't. You know I don't, since you're wrong. please answer.
No. What do you think then? Or is that not how I'm supposed to answer the question?
My question is, how do you think other people could see the same table?
I think other people could maybe compare the table against other tables. So they're not looking at the table that I'm talking about.
So this is actually a good question for you, Adriana. What if his answer is, no, everybody will see it the same. They'll see it like me.
Well, then you could actually ask further about why do you think that everybody see it in the same way? Or do you have experiences, like life experiences or facts that can demonstrate that?
Mm-hmm.
And if yes, why, which one? Another question could be about consequences. So if you think that this table is ugly, what are the consequences? How is that affecting other people, for instance?
We keep going back to ugly. Starting my table.
Buy a new table, Joe.
This table was 20 euros and it was worth every euro I paid for it. Thank you, IKEA. Give me free stuff, IKEA.
But what I like about this is that every question builds on the previous answer that was given and it loops into each other. So it is not a structure of questions that is meant to break down, but to build up.
I think what's also nice is at no point did you ever close the conversation, right? And this is something that designers, I'll say a lot of times, can tend to do. They will ask a question and then say, yes, but, or they'll say, yes, and, right? Yes, I heard what you said, but this is what I think. Instead of trying to continually ask questions to understand whether that's a client or a teammate, to really break everything down. And then at that point, perhaps you can also explain your perspective in those same ways so that both of you can have a more foundational point of view on how each other thinks. But the point is you're not closing the conversation, which I think people want to do in order to quote unquote win.
And I think as a design consultancy, when your first few conversations with the client are like this, you establish two really great things. First of all, you're showing off that you know that you are not the expert in the matter at hand. The company that asked you in to consult with them is the subject expert.
Holy crap, I love that. Yes.
Right?
No, I mean, that's a beautiful point.
But second of all, what you're also doing is that you're showing a method that can make you think of a problem in 15 ways, whereas the client has mostly already accepted that one answer to all these questions is it. But by asking more and more questions, they will figure out how many more ways there are to think about the same problem and maybe find out new aspects. So you're opening the process up for them to join in instead of you as a consultant coming in and putting a method down and saying, we need to fill in these boxes on the business canvas or anything like that. You're saying, let's figure out what the boxes are at all before we start filling anything in.
And I think that's really a valid point also, going back to how can we use the Socratic method in our daily life. Designers have to be facilitators of a process of thinking, and we need to help our clients to think, and we need to let them think with their own head. So it's not about imposing solutions, as you just said.
Yeah.
And actually, this is something really similar to what Socrates was doing, because actually, he was calling his method meiotics, which comes from the Greek word, which means midwife. And the reason is that as a midwife, he was trying to bring to life the implicit truth of somebody. And then I think we should do the same with our clients. We shouldn't come and impose an idea, but rather bring it to life.
Yeah, I think by that method, you also remove the dreaded moment of having to present a final design or a final solution and hoping that they will sign off on it. You already know they will sign off on it because they were part of the invention, or at least the early stages of that, and they already know what direction that we could go and why that's valuable.
This is really nice to frame for consultancies or designers who want to take a problem and then scurry away to a cave and solve that and bring it back. Like it is some sort of, you know, 10 commandments from on high. The approach that, you know, we try to take, and Adriana, I think you're bringing to light a lot of things that we can improve upon, is one which we work with a company or a team or another designer to help bring to fruition something that they have in their head, but they can't quite get it out. They can't quite pull everything together. They can't quite express it in a way that maybe meets a user need or meets a market need. And this is where we end up helping, right? This is where these types of conversations help bring that to life, as you were saying. Adriana, if you had to leave us with a couple tips for designers to have better conversations through this type of method, what are the few things that you would leave us with?
The first thing is about asking more questions when you're working in a team, because when you're working together, you need to move forward together. And that is possible just if you challenge each other to learn more, and specifically to get a deeper understanding of what the topic is instead of just battling to each other. So asking more questions about why a person is thinking in a specific way rather than not. The second one is to remove our personal biases in general, and trying to, for a second, when we are starting to already be in that battle position, calm down, stop there, and instead of pushing for what we are actually thinking it's right, rather ask another question and open again the conversation. And the last thing is about being active listeners, because asking questions put us immediately in the positioning of listening. And listening is something that we do every day, but that doesn't mean that we are doing it the right way. To be active listeners, we need to pay attention to what the other person is saying. We need to give feedback when they are talking, that we are actually listening. So, for instance, a good way to do that is through body language. So, for instance, nodding or using open gestures or smiling. Those are really simple things, but it's really easy to forget. And the last thing is about giving feedback when a person is done talking. And we need to give them the space to talk without interrupting them. And if we didn't understand what they said, a good way to be on the same page is to rephrase what they just said and ask if it's what they're actually saying.
One of the ways I've liked active listening described is that your focus is on listening, not preparing your own answer. And I've always thought that summarized it so well, because everyone is listening so that they can respond quickly.
Yeah.
As opposed to actually listening and then just sitting there for a moment.
And you can see this on people's faces when they already know what they're going to say next, regardless of what you're saying at that moment. So this is where the confirmation nodding and facial expressions come in,
that their mouth is halfway open, that you can just see their arm is ready to go up with, like, you know, that beautiful sounds of the mouth.
yeah.
So Adriana, thank you so much for being a guest on the show this week. And Chus, any last words about other things that we may have forgotten? Any other topics you want to rant about? You know, Android or
I don't want to rant about Android anymore.
Okay.
No. I just think you should get one, and then we'll see.
OnePlus, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, then I will talk to you next week, man.
Bye.
Later.